It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running a little bit late on this 18th day of April, 2024. This is The Horn. This program is live. Hi, I'm Robin. And, well, Annette had an appointment in Beckley this afternoon at 3 o'clock. And as a consequence, got back when I got back. But I'm here. And as I said, this program is live. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you'll go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza. It is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between and the great globe round. And where if you do pop into the aforementioned merry, wacky, zany, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, Anatole and Irish Dave and Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo, and capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, Bud Trimmer Emeritus, and Zimmergist Extraordinaire, Roger, in Oregon. And where it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, it is, as Emerson, Lake, and Palmer once remarked, "Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside." Because a full jury, has been seated in Nitwit Nero's election interference trial in New York. They still have to come up with their 6 alternates, but the 12 are in the box and ready to get to work. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thank you very kindly to our 18th day of the month subscribers. Thank you, Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you to Joy in Ann Arbor. Thank you both for being partial sponsors of the program. Thank you so very much indeed. Where do we stand? Well, we are at... let's see. We are at 900 bucks, and fortunately, thanks to Gino's challenge that he put on the table yesterday, we can knock that down to 300 bucks if we just meet Gino's challenge, the April is Blooming challenge, courtesy of Gino out in Utah. Thank you again, Gino. So, 10 at 30, 30 at 10, 3 at 100, perish the thought. But that can get everything except today covered. Emilio asking, I thought the jury's filled. I thought they went from 7 to 5 today. They did, and then they picked jurors 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. So there is there's a jury. And now it's just a matter of finding the 6 alternates. There's also something else going on at this hour that I thought we might want to check in on. Thanks so kindly to Charlie over at APS Radio. I have here before me the link to the live stream of the UN Security Council meeting on the Palestinian attempt for nationhood status, something that they've been... Well, Palestine has had observer status in the UN since 2012. The Israelis didn't like that either. But now they're pushing for full statehood. And if it can get to the General Assembly, they've got a pretty good shot. It's a matter of getting out of the Security Council. So let's check in on some of that audio, please.
Because we
and thanks again, Charlie, at APS News, APS Radio News.
In order to get aid in and hostages out.
This is
then,
the
making progress
ambassador
towards
from
a
the UK.
Sustainable ceasefire without a return to destruction, fighting, and loss of life. Our Foreign Secretary has been in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories this week to offer our support towards achieving this. We will continue to work urgently to help bring peace and galvanize a political process towards a two-state solution which provides justice and security for both Israelis and Palestinians. I thank you.
I thank the representative of the United Kingdom and pass the floor to Japan.
Thank you, Madam President. Last month, the Security Council was able to finally adopt a resolution which demands an immediate ceasefire in Gaza in the hopes of bringing about a real change on the ground. However, a ceasefire has not been realized, and the humanitarian catastrophe is deepening. The people of Gaza are facing unprecedented tragedy and hardship. Much of Gaza's population lives in despair with little food and water, deprived of human dignity. In the meantime, serious diplomatic efforts are being made to bring about a cessation of hostilities and the release of the hostages. We reiterate our strong support for the crucial role of the United States, Egypt, and Qatar to this end, and appreciate their tireless efforts. Once a sustainable ceasefire is in place, a reconstruction mechanism for Gaza with the support of the international community and the establishment of effective governance by a reformed Palestinian Authority will be essential. Madam President, Japan has strongly upheld the Palestinian rights to self-determination and consistently supported a two-state solution in which Israel and the future independent Palestinian state live side by side in peace and security. We have provided maximum support for Palestinian state building efforts from political, economic, and social aspects for decades. Our principled position was reflected in our vote in favor of the 2012 General Assembly resolution granting Palestine the status of non-member observer state at the United Nations and expressing the hope that the Security Council would consider favorably the application of Palestine for admission to full UN membership. Madam President, this is the first time since 2011 that the Security Council has deliberated on Palestinian membership in the United Nations. The intervening years have been marked by little progress in direct negotiations between the parties, whereas most recently we have witnessed escalating regional conflict that has caused untold suffering. At this critical moment, Japan voted in favor of today's draft resolution as a comprehensive decision, recognizing that Palestine meets the criteria for admission to the United Nations membership, while also taking into account the perspective of promoting the establishment of a Palestinian state through peaceful negotiations between the parties concerned. I thank you very much.
I thank the representative of Japan and pass the floor to the representative of Switzerland.
Merci, Madame la Présidente. La Suisse est abstenue sur ce projet de résolution. Sans nous y opposer, nous estimons qu'à l'heure actuelle, cette étape n'est pas propice à une détente de la situation et à une solution pacifique au vu de la grande instabilité et du conflit sur place. Nous pensons qu'il serait mieux de procéder à l'adhésion de la Palestine aux Nations Unies en tant que...
Well, I must confess my French is entirely too rusty to pick up much of the Swiss ambassador to the UN's remarks, but I did note that Switzerland supports... I got enough to know that, and if Flavio's listening, he probably picked it all up, but Switzerland supports Palestinian recognition, statehood. So we'll keep rolling on that, or keep that going, and maybe check back in when it looks like someone speaking English might be up there. Ralph's, by the way, with a challenge to get us started, in addition to Gino's challenge. $25 challenge for Elon Musk paying 4.5% in taxes this year. Poor baby. And I have no idea what his screen or his photo icon avatar is. I'll just leave it alone. But he said, for those wondering, I will pay over $11 billion in taxes this year. And Anya Overman was at the ready and said, yeah, that's 4.5% of your net worth. You paid 3.27% between 2014 and 2018, and no federal taxes at all in 2018. You made $36 billion in one day in 2021. Most U.S. people pay 10 to 37% in federal taxes and up to 13.3% in state taxes. Stop vying for sympathy from people who pay and pay your fair share. God, he's such a gross little grifter. So, thank you. If somebody wants to kick in $25 to celebrate the 4.5% Leon scum pays in taxes, well, the challenge is on the table, in addition to Gino's April is Blooming challenge. Thank you so much. Let's see, the Chinese ambassador is speaking now. Okay, nope. My Mandarin's even more rusty than my French. My Mandarin is non-existent. But the fact of the matter is, as we watch all of this transpire, there is, as I said, a jury now. Judge Mershon seated the 12-member jury this afternoon. He had dismissed two earlier in the day, as Emilio noted. He has indicated that they'll get done by tomorrow and that Judge Mershon wants to begin opening statements. And, oh dear God, it's another... I know I've harped on this before. And it's kind of like a tick for me. But I'm looking at a news story now that says that, and this is a quote, Mershon has said he would like to have opening arguments on Monday morning. God damn it, God damn it, God damn it, God damn it, God damn it. There has never been a trial in the history of the United States or in our colonial era in which anyone has offered up opening arguments in a trial. A certain degree, and this is just civics, a certain degree of jurisprudential literacy is good even among lay folk. And maybe we could offer a special ed class for journalists to teach them that there is no such thing as a finding of innocence or an opening argument. To be clear, an opening statement is a statement of the facts that the lawyer in question expects to hear or to show. At the end of the trial, there are closing arguments. And that's after all the facts and law have been adduced and the respective counsel argue how those facts and how that law should be interpreted by the jury in formulating and reaching a verdict. But as we noted, he's already, Nitwit Nero is, having a hard time even maintaining a modicum of decorum during a time when all he has to do is sit there. He's not called upon for any commentary, but he can't. And so he's probably dosed to the gills and still grumbling. And on Monday, when the prosecutors start talking in their opening, statement, and say the state will prove that that man, pointing to him, Donald J. Trump, did engage in and did A, B, C, D, E, and I don't know, maybe somewhere along the way say, are you listening, melanoma? Yeah, he was romping with Stormy when your baby was 4 months old and you were still recovering from giving birth. How's that make you feel, melanoma? But no, they won't say that because that's actually his defense. Well, I paid off the hooker I had a relationship with because I didn't want to embarrass my beloved wife, who once removed her clothing in exchange for money for the gratification of total strangers. She's the only first lady that's ever done that. Did you know that? Yes. Some people are saying she was. Right? No, they'll say that he did it because he was trying to keep voters from finding out what a disgusting perv he is. And again, I go back to the sage of South Carolina, Stan, our dear friend Todd. I don't think he'll... he's going to wind up watching this via video. But possibly, well, I think actually more important is how one of the jurors wound up getting released from jury duty. And point of fact, juror number two went to the court and raised concerns that her identity had probably already been compromised. That's curious. By whom? By Fox News, of course. And in particular, one specific shithead there, namely Jesse Waters, who started out as the cameraman stalker for Bill Falafel Man O'Reilly. Okay, we'll do it live. And who reported Tuesday night, and this is from a Washington Post article. Fox News host Jesse Waters on Tuesday broadcast extensive biographical details about juror number two, her neighborhood, occupation, education, marital and family status, and what industry her fiancé works in. And Waters concluded by saying, I'm not so sure about juror number two. So the attack on the jury is on, and Judge Mershon does have the right to haul Jesse Waters' ass right into court and order him to show cause why he ought not be held in contempt. Because this is plain old garden variety mob behavior. And the grunting and the hooting is already well underway over the jurors, with paranoid conspiracy theories, especially coming from Waters, saying that undercover liberal activists are lying to get onto the jury so that they can convict him no matter what the evidence is. What a dipshit. Honestly, what a dipshit. Jury duty in a high-profile case sucks. You can wind up sequestered and having to live in some crummy hotel for weeks on end. And, of course, after Waters said that, then Nitwit Nero amplified it, catapulted the propaganda, as Dim Leader used to say back in the early aughts. Thereby very likely violating the gag order that's already in place. In fact, what he's doing now is being described as unwise. Going after the jury. He remained seated in the courtroom this morning when the jury came in, and the fact of the matter is, you stand for the jury. His entire counsel table stood and faced the jury, but he remained seated. Over at Lawfare, editor Tyler McBrien said, "When the defense is introduced to the potential jurors seated in the audience, Trump does not stand up like his legal team does and turn to face them." Renato Mariotti, former federal prosecutor, said, "I've never observed a defendant refuse to stand and face the jury. Any competent lawyer would tell their client that his fate is in the jury's hands, and they will watch everything he does. Trump's disrespect for the jury is unwise." Judge Mershon, however, kept his counsel and did nothing. This is known as giving Nitwit Nero all the rope he needs with which to hang himself. And so, he is coming apart. He went outside and barked and grunted into a microphone at cameras as soon as proceedings were over today. And he waved around a sheaf of papers, printouts of news stories, and claimed, "It's rigged. It's definitely rigged."
I'm supposed to be in New Hampshire, I'm supposed to be in Georgia, I'm supposed to be in North Carolina, South Carolina, I'm supposed to be in a lot of different places campaigning, but I've been here all day on a trial that really is a very unfair trial. These are all stories. This is over the last few days from legal experts. This is Wall Street Journal editorial. But all of these are stories from legal experts saying how this is not a case. The case is ridiculous. This is another one. The case is a ridiculous Trump indictment.
That's because they're the same story twice.
No fraud. All of these stories are stories of how, and these are done by the experts and editorials. Bragg falsified business record, and he falsifies them. He's the one. He's the fraud. But take a look at all of these are our stories. You see them here. Bragg's indictment even falls as an indictment. All of them.
Yeah, and all of those ink-stained wretches are not a judge of the Supreme Court of the state of New York. It's, I won't say pitiful or pathetic, because there's nothing about this odious adipose wad of somewhat human tissue that is worthy of pity or sympathy. But you can see and hear that he's beginning to crumble. I mean, his pettifoggers gave him some printouts of news stories to go and play with in front of the press in hopes what? That he wouldn't just completely drop trowel and shit on the gag order and find himself in the clink. There is not enough money in the world to make me want to defend that man. And look, when you have your cup of coffee in law school, sooner or later they'll tell you about how John Adams, because he so thoroughly believed in the English judicial system, that he provided the defense for the British redcoats who were accused of murder in the Boston Massacre. And he did so because every criminal defendant is entitled to a zealous defense. Yeah, I get that. But that was, what, 1773? Fully 251 years ago? Yeah. And times have changed. And this, he's unmanageable by any criminal lawyer. And so his pettifoggers here, Todd Blanche being one of them, just had to sit there and let grumpy, crazy old Uncle MAGA blather away.
Greg crosses the Rubicon, indicting Trump on nonsense. The whopping outrage in Trump's indictment. It's a whopping outrage, and it is an outrage. Everybody's outraged by it. You know, we had 18 DA or DA types or clubs, 18 or 19 or 21, if they counted all their in and out like. And in the meantime, we have murders going on right outside in New York. Look at this. National Review.
National Review. The Hall of American Racism.
Andrew McCarthy. Every one of them saying they call it a zombie case, meaning it is no case. And they say, is it constitutional? They don't think the case is. These are all stories that have taken place over the last few days. Take a look at this.
He's cold reading it all and making it up as he goes along.
D.A. Bragg wants us to believe that his pursuit of Trump isn't political. Of course it's political. And they're doing it for Biden. They're doing this for Joe Biden. Even the Rolling Stone, no friend of mine.
The Rolling Stone.
They don't like, it says, they don't like Bragg's chances on this case. It's a disgrace. That's a nice headline. I'd like to read that one too. But everyone who lies about the case. Justice is on trial. You know, the whole world is watching this New York scam. The trial spectacle begins. That's Wall Street Journal. It's a spectacle. Every one of these.
Honest to God, do you think he goes home every evening and watches Robert De Niro playing Al Capone in The Untouchables? Because this sounds like the rantings of a man who, by the way, his brain was being hollowed from the inside out by spirochetes as a result of tertiary syphilis. Kind of makes you wonder how it is that those two managed to sound so much alike.
America is a third world country. Daily Caller.
Daily Caller, sure.
Wow, that's New York Magazine even. All of them, it just came out. These are all, every single one. I haven't seen one that says it's a good trial.
It's political. This is a Wall Street Journal editorial.
He told us that earlier.
And it's a shame. It's a shame. And I'm sitting here for days now, from morning till night, in that freezing room. Freezing. Everybody was freezing in there. And...
aw, grumpy old Uncle MAGA needs a sweater and a plaid blankie on him lap. I'm telling you, we may be closer to correct than we even dared dream.
All for this, and this is your result. Look at that. Each one of them is a story. And it's very unfair. Very bad thing. Very bad thing. The whole world is watching this hoax. You got a DA that's out of control. You have a judge that's highly conflicted. The whole thing is a mess, and you have the leading candidate and leading...
You know what the funny thing is about the DA out of control argument? Alvin Bragg isn't saying shit. He's doing all of his... he and his staff are doing all their work in the courtroom. He's not having fun needling nitwit Nero the way Letitia James did, because, of course, that was just a civil case. This is criminal, and Alvin Bragg... who I was had my misgivings about, is remaining silent. Something that Nitwit Nero could learn a thing or two about from him. y'all, he ain't gonna make it.
Crooked Joe Biden by lot. He's the one that should be in trial. He's a crook. You got a crooked president. He should be in trial with all the stuff he's done and his family. He should be in trial. But he's the one in charge. His top people are here, working with the DA's office to make sure everything goes right.
But and who are those top people, Grandpa Maggot? If he was pressed for the proof, he couldn't come up with it to save his soul.
It shouldn't go right because they have no case. And that's what this is all about. And it really is a shame. This country is devolving into a third world country between having no borders, having no justice, we have no justice, and having a press that doesn't want to cover the facts. So thank you very much.
Meanwhile, the cameras are sitting there pointed at him, and nobody's even asking him a question and just letting him stand there and lie and lie and lie. Going back to Leon Scum and his 4.5% tax rate, Cynthia in the Bay Area said, I pay taxes so the rich don't have to, or any other non-rich person for that matter. This is what you get for voting for Republicans, as Malloy used to say, Bohica, bend over, here it comes again. Fuck. But then I guess the maggots really like getting fucked that way. Why else would they vote for it? They do. They do. And, by the way, Cynthia sent me something earlier, a link to a story over at HuffPost. A second Trump presidency would be a nightmare scenario for transgender people. Cynthia said, more warnings for us transies. I have no doubt where it will all lead to if that filthy, evil, rat-fucking pig shit Trump gets back in the White House. We've seen this shit before and it never works out good. And so again, I'm living this year, maybe my last year of life, as best I can. Along those lines, I can't wait to do my next smoke. And even though I overcooked the ribs and salmon on my last smoke, my God, were they ever good. I'll be trying again real soon. Next time with the salmon, we'll maybe try the egg and the salt thing with the dill and the lemon. And... one thing that, you know, a lot of times when I'm smoking, I like to have the meat at room temperature because that means that, you know, the cooking process has a little less to overcome. But with salmon, start it ice cold. And that way, you know, that way you're less prone to overcooking. But... Cynthia's right, you know, the article delves deeply into Project 2025, which, by the way, isn't just pointed at LGBTQ people. There's a lot of people that the Heritage Foundation despises. And each and every member of this radio family community congregation is on their list, because we don't bow and scrape to authoritarianism, and we don't have any fascist impulses. But Cynthia, remember, you're in a safe state, and you have a government that will fight back with everything in its power to protect Californians. So don't be quite so grim, sis. And if there's a spare bedroom, you may yet see me there, because I'm not in a safe state. I kid. Flavio says, effing ensure the anonymity of the jury already. Let's do bring Jesse Waters into court for intimidating jurors. But more importantly, guarantee the anonymity of the jurors. Trump and his team have forfeited the right to know their identities. Fucking hell. I agree. And that's why I think it sincerely is important. You know, and you know what? Don't just bring in Jesse Waters. Bring in his producer. Bring in Jesse Waters and his producer. And bring in Lachlan Murdoch and his creepy old nonagenarian daddy. Bring the lot of them in. And let them stand there and shake. Because apparently they didn't learn anything from the Dominion suit or the other suit that continues against them. Oh, thank you, Steve, in New York. Steve jumping in on Ralph's challenge, the 4.5% Leon scum tax challenge. So there's $15 to go on that, and then we'll get to the 240 remaining on Gino's challenge. And hopefully get down to being just $300. You know, just today. Ralph's asking, when will the gag order come down? I mean, the gag order's already there, and he's tap dancing all over it. But if Judge Merchan just blazes out of the gate and goes straight to the gag order. Well, again, as I've said frequently, every judge does everything in their power to protect whatever judgment is going to come out of the court, guilty or not guilty. Notice how I didn't say innocent? And so he's just going to sit and play out the rope until Nitwit Nero finally hangs himself. Or, that's a bit grim, until he hoists himself on his own petard. Now, that sheaf of papers that he was shuffling there, very few people were buying into it. Lawyer Bradley Moss said, Your Honor, I submit into evidence articles by Jonathan Turley and Andrew McCarthy and demand you issue a directed verdict in my favor. Or, see,
it's in print, so believe it. It looks like multiple copies of the same paper.
Another making reference to Bishop Willard Romney. Stop me if you've heard this one before. Binders full of attorneys. Another individual said he literally just printed out his social media feed, and he named like three people. Wow, three people who support you are saying you're innocent. Well, let's just throw the whole thing out then, since Turley says so. Molly Jong Fast wanted to know, is he tired? Is he sleepy? Oh, and speaking of Nitwit Nero's pettifoggers, Elena Havana he got scorched. She was whining about how the liberal media treat her based on her own performance and her own behaviors. This is precious. Among other things, she said that Nitwit Nero was snoozing in court because court is brutally boring. Well, maybe if not, maybe if it's what maybe for some, but I mean, if you're freedom is on the line, maybe you'd perk up for the whole thing. But I guess not. But she said the liberal media are making her look stupid. She said they're making me look stupid. Well, yeah, honey, they're succeeding. That's all there is to that. Let's pop back by the United Nations real quick. Ah, here's the Palestinian ambassador.
Little Palestinian. هل ستعطوها الحصانة لطرد
Now, my Arabic's even rustier than my Mandarin and my French, so I don't have one of those little translator folks. Darn the luck. Thanks again, Charlie. Over at APS Radio News, Charlie has a live stream there on YouTube. You can it comes in handy. You can subscribe. APS Radio News live stream. This is fun. One reporter noted that Nitwit Nero seems to be put out with the jurors because once again, he's having to do something he's never had to do. Deal with the genuine opinions of everyday Americans. And so after 3 days in court listening to numerous people say that they somewhere between don't like him and hate his fucking guts, today Tyler McBrien posted some quotes that he heard in the courtroom. And I don't know what kind of a strategy this was, but Todd Blanche, spoke to the potential jurors today and said some of the witnesses have said they really don't like Nitwit Nero. And one even said they wanted revenge. And so then he said, can y'all look past that and focus on if such witnesses met the burden of proof of Trump's guilt or innocence? And one juror said, he seems very selfish and self-serving. And I don't like that in a public servant. How he portrays himself in public seems to me, he's not my cup of tea. Another juror said, I don't have strong opinions about him, but I don't like his persona. That doesn't mean I can't be fair and impartial. Yet another juror said, sometimes the way he may carry himself in public leaves something to be desired. Went on to say that she was a centrist and her opinions wouldn't impact her impartiality. Another juror said, I don't have strong opinions about him, but I have posted negatively about him on social media. But I post negative stuff about a lot of politicians. and MSNBC's Yasmin Vasogian upon the juror saying that he was selfish, said, it seems the former president does not like this response, leaning back, crossing his arms, and hearing these opinions of him. Of course, another juror said, I live in one of his constructions. I lived in one of his constructions, and I didn't have any complaints about how they were built. And then Nero nodded and smiled. We got a good one here. Well, with any luck at all, he'll have the entire jury hating his goddamn guts after the first week or so of trial. Okay, Lou, let's just be thankful Nitwit Nero didn't engage the incredibly effective and dynamic John Wayne Law Group. Ramalama. Ding dong. Hey, thank you, Christopher. Christopher just jumped in and finished off Ralph's challenge, the Leon Scum 4.75% tax rate challenge. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you so much. Also saying, Gino! So, okay, we'll hold off on Ralph's. And we'll apply that to the 240, 230. We're 225 remaining on Gino's Spring is Blooming challenge. Thank you so much, Christopher. Okay, so $225 on Gino's challenge, and $15 to go on Ralph's challenge. Again, thanks, Christopher. Oh, the guy from Palestine is still going. Maybe these are closing arguments. I don't know. Now, there's some stuff we didn't get to. Randy Radar says, I just finished season 2 of Star Trek Picard, and I cried a lot. Oh, my. We haven't done Picard yet, and I started on season 1, kind of had a hard time with it, but I keep being told that season 2 and season 3 are nothing short of masterful. This is funny. I don't know what it is about Republicans, teabaggers, maggots. I think it's because they're absolutely challenged as to humor. Remember yesterday how we were talking about Carrie Lake repeatedly saying, strap on, strap on, strap on. And everybody knew what she was getting at because, well, maggots are a bunch of perverts. Well, here's another one. the Fedum carcass. Has said that they're going to take shifts to guard the House floor so they can stop resolutions they don't like from slipping through and perhaps affecting their power, their ability to wield power. Naturally, they came up with a name for this. I'm not kidding. The Floor Action Response Team. Spell it out. Come on. It's okay. Yes, the FART aims to guard against a voice vote or unanimous consent vote where action could be stealthily taken against the Fedum carcass and their members. Micah Solner over at Punchbowl News, where do they get those names either, said,
Freedom Caucus members plotting defensive tactic to man the House floor today by to avoid any meddling by moderates.
Among other things, they're afraid that Representative Thomas Massey of Kentucky Stan, who got his ass handed to him by AOC a couple of years back, he's not a member of the Fedum carcass, but he is a hardcore right winger, and in fact he has signed on alongside Marginal Trailer Queen's motion to vacate the speaker, and the maggots are afraid that he and Chip Roy of Dribblin' Dick, Texas, the policy chair of the Fedum carcass, might wind up being kicked off the House Rules Committee by moderates. Moderates is doing a lot of work in that. Moderate MAGAs. One member of the FART told Solner, technically it would be possible to file unanimous consent on that. One member told me if moderates try and kick off those members, it would be an act of war. And it was apparently kind of nasty in the Rules Committee today. Bless her heart, and I mean that in a good way. Representative Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut lit the committee up. Over the fact that the maggots are trying to see to it that Ukraine and democracy falls, and that Putin is enabled to roll into Poland, Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania. No, she did. She torched him, and I'm so proud of her.
Has not moved forward. There was a bipartisan bill that Trump killed in the Senate, but a ranking member, DeLauro.
In many respects, we continue to sit here and to deal with revisionist history here. Lest we forget, it was the Trump administration that violated the Impoundment Control Act, illegally withholding security assistance from Ukraine. Let's not forget that when we think about what emboldened Putin, let us not forget the words of the former president, which everyone has invoked here today in some way or another, that Putin is his dearest friend. He knows him. He knows him well. And don't you think Putin is waiting very, very carefully to see another Trump administration? They are joined at the hip. So let's not sugarcoat what is going on here in terms of trying to indict the Biden administration. I want to walk away from this whole debate about administrations, because it is not the moment at hand. One sentence about border security. I sat in the White House, not in a classified meeting, where Republican colleagues said that we won't have Ukraine without bipartisan border security. And then you know what? We accomplished bipartisan border security. It was, oh, you can shake your head all you want, but Democrats and Republicans voted for border security. And you know what? It was Donald Trump who said, don't give Biden a win. You think about that. Put that aside. This moment is now. The United States Senate, you can have all the views you want about the United States Senate, but hold them for this debate. It is now. It is about the United States House of Representatives. We have the opportunity to do what we do here, and that is to govern. And what are we doing in governing? Is that to be a world leader. And for months and months, we have been diddling around where people are dying in Ukraine. Don't talk about what weapons we want to give them. We're not giving them what they need now, and it has been months in the coming. And we ought to today, immediately, we should have picked up that Senate bill, brought it to the floor, and voted on it immediately, and we would be out of here today in doing it. Let us not rewrite what is happening. The moment is ours. And if the House of Representatives abdicates its responsibility, yes, the history will write the story. And that it is on us. When we had that moment, we said no. I, for one, will not say no. I will provide Ukraine with the weapons that it needs to go forward. I would provide Israel what it needs to defend against Iran. I am overwhelmingly in support of our being able to deliver humanitarian assistance at a volume that will meet that need, because we're standing by. We're standing by and watch Ukrainians die. We're standing by and watch Palestinians starve to death, Sudanese starve to death, Haitians, etc. If that's the way we want to be remembered in history, it's certainly not the way I want to be remembered. So let's vote on what we need to be doing here today, casting our vote in favor of the national security package.
Sounds like she gave them all they could stand and more than they wanted. Oh, you can sit here and nod your head all you want, but that's the fact. And so, my God, for months and months we've been diddling around. She's not wrong. You gotta appreciate the sense of humor out there in the wider internet world. Someone, upon hearing the news of the fast action response team, said, "I'm sure the fuller action response team will not be silent, but deadly." Another adding, "I knew something stunk with that House Freedom Caucus." Well, you know, we need to laugh once in a while. I don't know what the outcome of the Security Council meeting was. It has apparently come to an end, and it appears that Palestine got the last word. I don't know if they voted or if they vote in. I don't know the procedure. Thank you very much to an anonymous individual who's finished off Rouse's 4.5% Leon scum tax challenge. So that's met, and we've got $425 to go, or $225. Oh my God, Roxanne, we've got $225 to go on Gino's April is Blooming challenge. Thank you again, Gino, and hopefully we can knock that down this evening. And, well, if that's the case, we won't even be at miracle status for Friday on the Front Porch. Flavio says, Rex Hupke at the Chicago Sun-Times USA Today agrees with you. The public doesn't pick the jurors, so there's no public need to know. Media is playing right into Trump's hands with jury selection as jurors become targets. sharing minute personal details of people who are being asked nothing more than to perform their civic duty is, he says, lowbrow at best. He also writes, on Tuesday, Fox News lunkhead Jesse Waters was spitting out details on jurors who had been seated. Speaking of juror number two, he said she gets her news from CNN and the New York Times and added, this nurse scares me if I'm Trump. Goodbye. And in fact, when she was dismissed, Judge Merchan did scold the press. Politico has also published specific information about a prospective juror, including her neighborhood, job, hobby, and the role she plays in a community organization. ABC News had a story, who are the first seven jurors of Trump's historic criminal trial? NBC News had an online story that headlined, a lawyer, a teacher, and a software engineer meet the first jury members of Trump's hush money trial. Hupke went on and said, the public doesn't pick the jurors, so there's no public need to know. And finally, Hupke says, this feels like a trial for a mob boss, not a politician. And the last thing the trial needs is thirsty for clicks media outlets tripping over each other to see who can be the first to report on a potential juror's favorite diner. The people called for jury duty in this case are under enormous pressure given the nature of the defendant. They should be treated with respect and given the anonymity they need to honestly and effectively do their jobs. And the fact of the matter is, it is the trial of a mob boss. Because the maggots are nothing if not a mob. That's not exactly rocket surgery. And he will do everything he can to intimidate the jury and try to swing it to his favor. What a time to be alive, right? Watching as what we have attempted to call American democracy hangs by a thread. And no LDS white horse anywhere within sight. Now, another potential juror was dismissed today. Dismissed for comparing Nitwit Nero to Italian Prime Minister and crook Silvio Berlusconi. The juror having said that media back in the old country pointed out similarities between Trump and Berlusconi, and went on to say, I don't think I can be impartial toward him. And Berlusconi was convicted of tax fraud in 2013, sentenced to 4 years in prison, banned from holding public office for 2 years. And then he died. He didn't make it, y'all. And in fact, where mob bosses are concerned, this from Joyce Vance, speaking to Mrs. Greenspan over on MSNBC.
You know, it's an unusual process. We knew it would be because of this need to protect the jurors' identities, which reminds me of doing violent organized crime cases. That's really the only parallel that I have for when jurors were concerned that they remain anonymous. This defendant who we are seeing under questioning right now, it's not unusual to have, or rather I should say this potential juror, it's not unusual to see a potential juror who maybe has to clarify an earlier answer. And in a situation where someone's not truthful, whether it's about a prior conviction or some other matter, often they're excused from jury service. But what's so unusual here is this concern from the other juror who walked in after being selected and said, I don't think I can be impartial because of all of the outside influences that are being exerted against me already, even this early in the process. The judge was correct to excuse her from service. The question is whether he will be able to protect the remaining jurors from this same sort of influence. Ultimately, there may be a question that will be reignited about whether this jury needs to be sequestered for this process to go forward.
And Joyce, Donald Trump has repeatedly said he wants to take the stand. We'll see if that changes after that hearing, which is tentatively scheduled for Friday afternoon, because that's when the DA is going to lay out all these things that he's now filed. He is planning to raise about some of the other proceedings against him that have concluded. And then that the judge would have to decide whether that would be appropriate in cross-examination. If it does, perhaps Donald Trump will decide he does not want to testify after all, right?
You know, Donald Trump says a lot of things. Criminal defendants don't usually take the witness stand unless they believe it's essential for their defense. Donald Trump, I suspect, will want to talk to the jury or will at least say that he wants to, and his lawyers will counsel him against doing that. There's just such an enormous risk of perjury. We've heard this from his lawyers over time. During the Mueller probe, his lawyers didn't even want him to sit down in person for a casual interview out of concerns that they at the time called a quote-unquote perjury trap. Well, testifying in front of a jury in open court under rigorous cross-examination would certainly open Trump up to a lot of potential problems. So ultimately, the question will be whether the former president is willing to take his attorney's advice and stay off of the stand. The Sandoval hearing, which will take place tomorrow morning, is a hearing in New York where the government comes forward and says, Judge, if this defendant were to take the stand, we would want to cross-examine him in order to impeach him on the basis of prior crimes and bad acts that he committed. And they're required to lay them out with specificity. When the judge rules on them, I think what we'll see Judge Marchand do is very carefully consider each individual event to decide whether or not it's relevant, whether or not it might be unduly prejudicial, so that Donald Trump knows precisely what the deal is before he decides whether to testify.
And apparently, juror number four, the person in question, gentleman, is coming back into the court. So maybe, Vaughn, we're going to get some.
You know, Joyce Vance said it raises a perjury problem. I don't think that's as big a problem as the problem for the lawyers, namely, it raises a subornation of perjury problem. Because those lawyers are going, his lawyers are going to know the truth. Or at least have some intimation of the truth. And if he gets up there and starts lying, they will know when he is lying. And if it comes out that they knew he was lying and said nothing, bye-bye law license. It's that serious. And so consequently, he can't take the stand. Because, for instance, if Stephanie Clifford, a.k.a. Stormy Daniels, gets on the stand and describes, in order to, not for prurient purposes, but in order simply to bolster her own credibility, for those of us who are old enough to remember the great Cletus hunt, by describing in minute detail, and emphasis on the word minute, sorry, the nature and shape and size of Orange Julius Geyser's little geyser. If he gets up there and says,
"No, it's not like that. I'm totally hung. I'm a donkey."
He's got a perjury problem. It's interesting that one of the fundamental tenets of the concept of perjury is that the lie under oath has to be material in nature. Well, if the nature of little one-eyed Trump is in question, that alone, because he will be crossed remorselessly. And he has no idea. Because, see, in his entire miserable, misbegotten, best part of him ran down his mama's leg life, he's always gotten away in a confrontation by using his excuse me tactic.
Excuse me, excuse me, excuse me.
That shit's not going to fly in a criminal trial. Because the prosecution will merely say, "Objection, Your Honor, the witness is non-responsive." And that gives Judge Merchan a chance to drop a house or an anvil or quite possibly a piano on him. Oh, yes, thank you for that, Flavio. Flavio says Silvio Berlusconi is still dead, so is Hugo Chavez. And I will add that also Generalissimo Francisco Franco is still dead. But Lou, rocket surgery, that's just an old, old meme. I mean, it's not rocket surgery. It's a confused elision of rocket science and brain surgery. I haul those out every now and then. Steve in New York, Donald Trump taking the stand. Oh, please, dear Blessed Virgin Mary, ask your son to make this happen. Ramalama. Ding dong. See what trouble you started? Not you, Steve. I mentioned Sporkfoot earlier. This is a good one. Marginal Trailer Queen actually offered an amendment in a foreign aid package for space laser technology to be used along the southern border. Philip Bump over at the Washington Post had a, well, field day. Of course, anything involving Sporkfoot is like shooting fish in a barrel, where the fish are rotten and the barrel is made of wormwood. Her language said, "By the funds made available by this act, such sums as necessary shall be used for the development of space laser technology on the southwest border." No mention in that language of the space lasers being run by the Rothschild family, you know, Jewish space lasers. Philip Bump said, "We're assuming that the intent here is to be lighthearted as well as to bring one more thing back to the border and immigration. A request for clarification from Green's office did not immediately receive a response, but poking fun at one's past eccentricities lands a lot better when one is not being problematically eccentric in much the same way." He said, "It's a feature of American democracy, not a flaw, that anyone can be elected to federal office. You don't need to be a lawyer. You don't need to have served at the local or state level first. But there's historically been an expectation of seriousness, of consideration of other viewpoints, if not a willingness to compromise. Green has never approached national politics with seriousness. Instead, she largely views decision-making through the same lens she always has, influenced by fringe theories and with supreme confidence in her own ability to put the pieces together. Let me take a minute with that statement. There has historically been an expectation of seriousness, of consideration of other viewpoints, if not a willingness to compromise. There's a problem with that, because there are issues in this country that are not worthy of consideration of other viewpoints or compromise. I've made it abundantly clear here in my little race that I absolutely am uncompromising on the rights of women to their own privacy and to the ability and the right to manage our own bodies as we see fit. How do you compromise on that? Well, here's a hint. There's no compromise. There's no kind of freedom. There's no sort of choice. It's all or nothing. And the thing is, we cannot rest until we get to all. And all the pasty-faced, doughy, white, old, creepy MAGA dudes can sit down and shut the fuck up because they don't have a dog in the hunt. So no, there's not always an expectation of compromise. Where's the expectation of compromise, I might ask, between, between maintaining a constitutional government and throwing it all away on the likes of Nitwit Nero? This is what's called Karl Popper's paradox. The only way to have a tolerant society is to be intolerant of fascism. Grind them into the dirt. And that leads me to, you know, where we are today in 2024. We need a 60-year look back to 1964. We need to deliver the kind of stomping to Nitwit Nero that LBJ delivered to Barry Goldwater. And one in which the people trying to ride his coattails rode right behind him into the dustbin of history. This cannot be a close victory. This has to be profound. Philip Bump, just finishing that story, said it's not clear, in fact, if Green's amendment is even a joke at all. Stephen New York said, I refuse to believe that's real. It's really something she said. Philip Bump is not a satirist at the Washington Post. Oh, well, I hope... good, it was almost. Gary Laborman out in New Mexico said, I almost pissed my pants, Trump's little one-eyed friend. Well, I'm trying to not take it too far into the gutter, Gary. Girl tries. We're going to have, another House Republican has called it quits. They've got another seat that has to be filled in November. Representing Jake LaTurner, who's been in the House since all the way back in 2020, said he's not going to be running this fall. He said the stress is too much, and the current wave of dysfunction in the House is too much.
The busy schedule of serving in and running for Congress has taken a toll. The unrepeatable season of life we're in, where our kids are still young and at home, is something I want to be more present for. Well, that's a relatively erudite way of saying I want to spend more time with my family. Undoubtedly, the current dysfunction on Capitol Hill is distressing, but it almost always has been. We just didn't see most of it. I'm still optimistic about the future of this country.
Well, I am too, if we can get rid of the likes of you, Jake. So he becomes the 14th House Republican to call it quits and bail on the 118th U.S. Congress. Now, he's not gonna up and quit like Ken Buck did. Petty. That would have thrown the House into chaos insofar as they would no longer have a majority. Mike Gallagher's on his way out after four terms in the House. This week, Gallagher said,
"Oh, this is more just me wanting to prioritize being with my family. I signed up for the death threats and the late-night swatting, but they did not. And for a young family, I would say this job is really hard."
11 out of the 14 have bailed since Mullah Moses Mike Johnson got the gavel in his creepy little hands. He's down to two defections from his party, Johnson is. In order to pass anything he wants. Well, bye, Jake. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. We talked about Sporkfoot a little bit. Well, Congressman Jared Moskowitz, we all know who he is. Yesterday, after Sporkfoot claimed that there are Nazis in Ukraine, you crow Nazis, remember that? Blast from our past. There was a hearing yesterday on China, and Marge came loaded for bear to the hearing about China, with a couple of articles about you crow Nazis. At the hearing, she grunted, "It's amazing to me that in just a few years' time, it's now considered misinformation to talk about the Nazis in Ukraine." Never mind the fact that Volodymyr Zelensky is Jewish. And that was when Moskowitz had about all he could stand. His grandparents were survivors of the Holocaust. At the hearing, he said, "There are no concentration camps in Ukraine. There's no gas chambers. There's no ovens. They're not trying to erase a people. Stop bringing up Nazis and Hitler. The only people who know about Nazis and Hitler are the 10 million people and their families who lost their loved ones. A generation of people who were wiped out. It's enough of this disgusting behavior using Nazis as propaganda. You want to talk about Nazis? Get yourself over to the Holocaust Museum. You go see what Nazis did. It's despicable that we use that and we allow it and we sit here like somehow it's regular." He's not wrong. But I will add that, yeah, he didn't say 6 million, he said 10 million people and their families who lost their loved ones. I don't know if that counts my uncle, who died doing everything he could to kill Nazis, or Annette's uncle, who marched all the way across Europe to eliminate the Nazi threat. I don't know if I want Sportfoot going to the Holocaust Museum. I've been there. You can't go through it without shedding copious tears. It's so, so horrible. And frankly, if Sportfoot set foot in that hallowed space, it would diminish it by her ever even having been there for a moment. God, the Ukro-Nazi thing is so... Wow, God, that's so 2021. 2022. And sadly, so-called progressives help spread some of that shit. Emilio, Trump's one-eyed friend. Stuart Rhodes? Oh, Ramalama. Sing out. Don't get that gun, kid. You'll shoot your eye out. Bang! Sorry, no sympathy for stupid Rhodes. None at all. Oh, we haven't had a Tommy the Tuber sighting for a while. Oops! You might recall that long before he became the senior senator from Talabama, Coach Tuberville, he got busted in a trading scam for a hedge fund. He didn't face criminal charges, but he had to pay up. And apparently he's still playing in the market. And so his latest regulatory filing says he listed the sale of put options for Adobe Incorporated, Qualcomm Incorporated, and Applied Materials, Inc. The Adobe options were for a strike price of $500 with an expiration date of December 20th, 2024. Four separate trades valued at $1,000 to $15,000 of Adobe options were made by Tuberville. The Qualcomm options were for a strike price of $155, expiring again December 20th, 2024. And the value of the trade was $15,000 to $50,000. The Applied Materials, those put options, strike price $175, expiration date of January 17th, 2025, and the value of the trade was $1,000 to $15,000. You know, those parameters aren't particularly helpful, are they? Breaking, Senator Tommy Tuberville is once again trading options. He's literally trading companies which he legislates on while having leveraged positions over them. Unusual. So he's probably as crooked as a dog's hind leg. Anyone surprised? And since there was a biotech firm in there, too, and, well, Tommy the Tuber is quite certain that little five-cell frozen wads of tissue are real children. Yeah, this. Namely, a recent Israeli airstrike in Gaza, it was December, blew the lids off of five liquid nitrogen tanks stored in a corner of the embryology unit of the largest fertility clinic in Gaza,
No, not a peep yet from the maggots who think that frozen embryos are actual babies. No word from the Supreme, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Alabama on whether some pettifogging prosecutor there might feel, nah, it didn't happen in Alabama, so everything's good. But the fetus fetish bunch are curiously silent. Silent as a graven image. Reuters noting the embryos in those tanks were the last hope for hundreds of Palestinian couples facing infertility. Dr. Baheladin Galyani said, "We know deeply what these 5,000 lives or potential lives meant for the parents, either for the future or for the past." Well, these are people who will never have another chance to have a child. "My heart is divided into a million pieces," he said. Meanwhile, the spokescreeps for the IDF said, "They are looking into the reports. They did not deliberately target the embryos." And I did not know this, but in vitro fertilization was widely available in Gaza. So, oh well. I mean, you can almost see the IDF quoting Colonel Chivington. "Kill them all. Nits make lice." Ralph said, "I'm assuming Tommy the Tuber thinks those stocks will go down. Maybe he used these to offset shares he has." I don't know. All I know is that Tommy the Tuber is crooked as a dog's hind leg, and if he does it, it's probably not legal. Oh, and this is apropos of nothing. I just realized something. Bad hostess. Someone's on the stress line. Let's find out who. Hey, welcome to the program.
I wonder if...
Hey, Dave.
Slumbering Donnie is going to be taking a shit in his pants because...
You mean Don... Wait. You mean Don Snorleone?
Yeah. Don Smoleone. I've also heard him referred to as the slumbering Don. I think that he's going to... I heard that he likes to shit himself on purpose to make people uncomfortable. I have a feeling he'll have reason to by the beginning of next week to shit himself, because, well, if he accidentally soils himself in the middle of the proceedings, that could throw him a monkey wrench in while somebody goes and changes his diaper.
Wow, there went dinner in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone.
I know, and I apologize for not giving the usual the usual warning. But I was, I sent you this joke yesterday about the Trumpian Bible, the quote from Trump 3:16.
Yes.
For Don Philip the Grip, that he sent his three misbegotten sons.
That whosoever should buy a Bible from him should not perish, but forever be upon the grift?
Of course. Of course. And to his followers, and I don't understand these people, well, yeah, a conviction will disqualify him as president, but I'd still vote for him. That I don't understand. I guess Bobby's not squirrely enough for them, and there are other third-party candidates whose melanin might have a challenge for some of these white supremacists. So, I don't know. I think I'm fascinated that he keeps falling asleep in court. I don't think I could. If I'm sitting there and I know the jury's got my life in their hands, oh, I'm staying awake. But
I mean, that seems QED, does it not?
Yeah, but you got to imagine that can't endear him too much to the jurors who've been seated. Because that shows disrespect for the entire process. And now if he gets demonstrative and starts snoring loudly in court or something like that, I can see the judge admonishing him to get a cup of coffee on the next break or something. But I would find it, if I were a juror, I'd find it completely insulting. I mean, granted, he's 77 years old. He's probably up past his nap time. And God knows I enjoy a good nap now and then. But I'm usually sitting at home. You know, I'm not out in public. I'm not in a courtroom. It's like, oh, I don't care about this. Now, if it was about his money, he'd be there constantly awake and, you know, pulling his shenanigans. And by the way, since the bond was not properly posted, if he still wanted to appeal, I believe he'd have to post the entire thing in cash.
Well, that's what I've been following, and I haven't been seeing that. Did the bond ever get posted?
Because I thought the court had instructed him to pay the $176 million or get a bond for it, or he could post the bond for the full amount. He only had 10 days, and it's been well past that.
Well, I thought so.
I would think it would be time for Letitia James to look over at the court and say, Your Honor, we need to move forward on this. Mr. Trump is not acting in good faith.
It seems obvious
to me.
That's
probably as respectful as she can get toward him. And he can't go, well, she's telling me because she's wanting me to pay all this money. No, the court found that you were required to pay this money. Well, if you don't, then the consequences begin. And I would surely believe that the court would have a list of management companies that could competently handle those properties while they're going through liquidation, who could manage them and keep them in good order. I know it's not their primary thing, but this cannot be the first time that the state of New York has seized property from someone who has committed fraud. I mean, New York is a fairly old state. It was a colony prior. So there's got to be centuries of law there.
Yeah. I don't know. It just sort of fell off the radar. Here's a Washington Post story Ralph's just provided me, serving as the Horn ad hoc dodgy Trump bond research department. Trump's $175 million bond deal defended in court by Knight Specialty Insurance Company.
Yeah, but they're not licensed to do business in New York.
No, they are not.
And I used to be in insurance. He's doing this as a dodge. Besides, not the Knight Group is a rather sketchy outfit with subprime loans and questionable business ethics, but they're in bed with Donnie. I unfortunately repeat myself. See, as a former insurance agent, I can't say, well, they're sons of bitches and all that. But I can say, yeah, they're a little sketchy. Let me put it to you this way. I wouldn't trust them with my grocery list. You know,
yeah.
A loaf of bread, a couple gallons of milk, dozen eggs, and they'd come back with dog food, cat food, and kitty litter.
Yeah.
But I don't know if she'd have to go to the appeals court or if she could go directly to the trial judge and begin the proceeding. Because it was the appeals court's order that they're operating under. And, you know, the accusation of, well, it'll interfere with the criminal case. No, it's not. Judge Marchand's going to make sure that doesn't happen.
I think you're right.
I think that he is, you know, from what I've heard and from what I've observed listening to the reports, he seems like a judge who wants to call it down the middle as much as possible. That way, if it gets appealed, it's not on his hands for an error that he made.
Right.
However, I have a feeling he's about to have no more fucks to give with Donald and the terms of his release. You know, if he acts up, you put him down in holding until 5 o'clock, and then you bring him in and ask him, like, Mr. Trump, what have you learned from this
I've learned that it's a scam. It's a total scam. You're a scam. Everybody's a scam except me.
Well, at that point, as the judge, I would look over at the Secret Service and go, well, boys, pack your toothbrushes because you're going to be spending the weekend at Rikers.
Take your soap on a rope, boys.
And don't, and, you know, hand him his jail-issued jumpsuit, his Crocs, and give him a complimentary copy of the book, Don't Stand Too Close to a Naked Man.
Okay.
Now, I'm being serious about that because Tim Allen, who wrote that book, had served time in Michigan.
Oh, I know. In the joint.
Cocaine dealing.
Yeah.
And
of course he's a,
I think
and now of course he's a right wing POS. Yes.
Right, but I still think that the advice is probably good. You know, what was it? I heard a former mobster on YouTube talking about his time in prison. He said the one thing his father had taught him that helped him in prison was to be polite and respectful to everybody, which Donnie would never be able to do. So they would have to keep him in isolation 24/7.
That's another one of those factors, Dave, that makes this ever so much more like a mob boss trial than a trial for political corruption.
Well, he runs his campaign and his business as if they were mob-owned. I mean, after all, Roy Cohn, which is his spiritual advisor growing up. And Roy Cohn was as crooked as a dog's hind leg, as well as being the most self-loathing gay man in U.S. history.
Exactly. I mean, he learned at the feet of a master, a guy who said, I'm not gay. I just like to have sex with men. Roy Cohn.
Well, I mean, Donnie wants to act like he can just call up J. Edgar Hoover and have done whatever he wants done. No, you're the wrong president. Okay. Eisenhower could have done that. Kennedy could have done it. Hell, Nixon did on a regular basis. And let's face it, Donnie is no Nixon. Nixon had people who would go to bat for him because they were believers. And Donnie's got people who will drop dimes on him just to save their own skin.
Oh, by the way, Emilio says,
rigged. Dave's grocery list is totally rigged. That list is such a disgrace. All healthy food and not a single fried extra greasy chicken skin. Celery. I mean, celery? That's straight from Biden and his henchmen, Dave.
Okay, Emilio. By the way, Billable Rick wants you to know, please tell Dave in the Blind that I already had my afternoon snack.
Okay, good. I'm glad I didn't ruin that.
And going back to the other nicknames, Randy Radar says, I like to call him the Pied Pooper.
Yes, I believe a long ago is involved there.
By the way, off topic, but what do you hear from Christine?
Well, she's doing pretty good. Right now, she's at war with the trailer court, but her lawyer and her financial advisor are both involved, so that's not bad. She's a lot more relaxed. and the cats are behaving themselves now. She'd gotten home, and she said, they're just acting up. I said, honey, you're upset, and they're picking up on it. You know how delicate feline auras are.
Absolutely.
You know, if you step on a feline aura, you will pay for it. But she has a home health care aide who has a 5-year-old son who likes to dump his pants.
No.
And he likes to stop in front of Christine. He'll run right in front of her and stop so that she will run into him. And she said, look here, you bastard.
No, he's a little heathen.
She told him, you are going to shut up and sit down. He goes, you're rude. And Christine said, boy, you don't want to see how rude I can get. Sit. He did. Christine said his mama just lets him do whatever the hell he wants. And I said, well, as long as he's standing in your house, you can tell him to go sit in the corner. She believes that there may need to be some kinetic disciplinary program that he may need to partake in. That way, he understands that hard heads makes it soft, backsides. But Christine's old school that way. She told me, you're lucky my mother isn't here. And from everything, my mother-in-law raised 9 kids. So I can imagine she was not above, you know, making sure they understood who was in charge. There was the hand, the paddle, the switch, and for extreme issues, there was the extension cord, but Christine was not the type to usually get the extension cord down. The worst thing that she ever did was she told her mom, she wasn't going to do something, and she dropped an F-bomb in front of it. Christine said when she woke up, she was very apologetic.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But, yeah, she's doing okay. She's doing okay. So, and I have just made some ramen with some Frank's hot sauce on it. And feeling pretty good.
Good. Good, good, good.
Now, as far as BB is concerned, I hope the United Nations recognizes Palestine as a country and gives it full status, because then Bibi can't do squat. And under international law, the Palestinians would have the same rights as the Israelis would have. And it would make a two-state solution, which the United States has been in support of for decades. That would make it much faster to happen. And if the Biden administration really wanted to send a message to BB, they would have voted yes on the question in the Security Council. I don't know if the Security Council has voted yet or not. But if they haven't, they should vote yes. I mean, it's not a contradiction in terms to say we support Israel's right to defend itself and will assist them where necessary and still recognize the Palestinians as a separate country.
Well, I haven't seen anything on the results of the Security Council meeting.
I think the way this thing usually goes is there's testimony from the parties and the supporters on either side, and then the vote happens like
son of a bitch.
What?
God damn it. We fucked up again. The United States, by we, I mean the United States.
We voted against the measure.
We vetoed it.
Oh, good God.
Fifteen members, of course, on the Security Council. 12 voted in favor. Dave, hold on. 15 members in the Security Council. 12 voted in favor of Palestinian statehood. The UK and Switzerland abstained. And the United States fucking vetoed it. I am so ashamed. The undying shame.
This is nonsense. This is absolute nonsense. And you know the American delegation got its instruction days ago. As long as the United States is willing to veto things on Israel's behalf, they will still continue to do these war crimes. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Bibi Netanyahu is no better than Adolf Hitler. There is not a scintilla of difference between these two fascist fuckheads. Except Dolph would have despised BD because he's Jewish. But hey, as long as they're willing to kill a lot of people for leaving from, well, they would probably be happy with each other until it was all over. Personally, I think that the leaders of Hamas and Bibi Netanyahu and his group should be put in a room with each other and fed nothing but ham sandwiches until they come to an agreement. Let's see how long these ultra-Orthodox and these fundamentalist Muslims will argue with each other while the only thing they've got to eat is a ham sandwich. And I'd make it a one ham sandwich, that way they'd have to fight over it. The last group standing gets their way. And then there'd be a lot less bloodshed in the Middle East.
Julian Borger, writing at The Guardian, says U.S. officials have been hoping Washington could avoid use of its veto if other states objected to a draft resolution before the council recommending the state of Palestine be admitted to membership of the United Nations. And we were so slight. We were so sleazy that we were trying to convince other council members to abstain so that we wouldn't look entirely alone on this. And that's apparently the UK and Switzerland. They, you know what? The UK and Switzerland should have voted in favor too and made us stand alone, steeped in our own wrong. Because then they came out with the bullshit pablum saying, and this was Deputy U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Robert Wood speaking to the Security Council.
The United States continues to strongly support a two-state solution. This vote does not reflect opposition to Palestinian statehood, but instead is an acknowledgement that it will only come from direct negotiations between the parties. Horse shit.
Yeah, that's BB. Go ahead.
Because frankly, Israel does not have a word to say in Palestinian statehood. There's no negotiation to be had. Oh, this is infuriating.
That was dug up in the 1770s. That occurred because a great deal because the British government was inconsistent in how it treated the colonists. One moment they treat them like Englishmen with all the rights
appertaining thereunto,
and then the rest of the time is, we defended your asses, so you have to pay an exorbitant fee to the mother country. It should be noted that gold sovereigns were illegal in the colonies. They forced the colonists to use silver. That way, they could never accumulate a large amount of wealth and become a power unto themselves.
By the way, the Israeli foreign minister, Israel Katz, commended the United States for stepping in with the veto on doing Israel's bidding.
My question is this. Why does Russia have a permanent seat on the Security Council? Why doesn't that rotate from the other former Soviet republics? Because as I recall, Stalin was Georgian. He was not Russian.
Yeah, Joe the Georgian.
This would have been the mother of all ironies. If they had rotated between the former Soviet republics, if it had been Ukraine's turn, and Vladimir decided to invade, or when he decided to invade, well, then there'd be UN troops on the ground then. The Russians should not have sole possession of the Soviet seat. If they want to rotate,
if it rotates, then at one point in time, that seat would be held by Ukraine.
Yeah, that's my point. If Ukraine had been in possession of the seat at that time, there'd be UN boots on the ground now, and they'd be looking over at Russia and going.
But let's stay focused here. The problem is us. I mean, this is pogo diplomacy. We have met the enemy, and they is us.
Does that mean I have to give up my publisher concession?
Let's not be radical, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, Brother Deacon Asa sending me the Reuters story just said, fucking pigs. How does the failure to impose a two-state solution on a recalcitrant pariah fascist state not vitiate the very purpose of the UN in the first place? We should, at the very least, we should have abstained, and then the vote would have gone to the General Assembly. And it would have required a two-thirds majority to admit. The problem is that two-thirds majority already exists. This is the United States denying democracy on a global scale.
Because the General Assembly sits in New York. They're using that as the club.
Yeah, that's probably part of it, without a doubt.
And if the United Nations really wanted to fuck the United States over, they could move the headquarters back to Geneva.
Yeah, but the Swiss don't want that bill. And part of the cost of admission for the money that the United States does pay into the UN is that it's kind of like the difference between it's like the difference between being union and non-union. A long time ago, a guy that my dad knew worked for Union Carbide, just like my dad did. Only my dad was union and he wasn't. And the guy said to my father, "Yeah, most of the time, my work life is pretty much the same as yours, even though you're union and I'm not. But every now and then, the company comes along and hands me a great big shit sandwich and says, 'Eat hearty.' And I don't have a union, so I have to eat hearty. You never have to eat that shit sandwich because you're in a union." And there's a certain transferability here. The UN can go along with its business, and we'll generally behave ourselves, unless it comes to Israel. And then we will abase ourselves, humiliate ourselves, embarrass ourselves.
And for what? Because allegedly over 2,000 years ago, a semi-literate itinerant rabbi and philosopher ended up getting crosswise the local legal authority.
There we go.
And then a religion sprang forth from that.
Well, hell, Abram wasn't even a Hebrew.
Abram was not even a monotheist.
Hold up. He invents monotheism, but Abram was from Ur of the Chaldees, which was anything but a monotheistic state. I mean, they had Astarte Ishtar. And the Ishtar cult was in charge of, one, the recipe for brewing beer, and two, the mandatory prostitution. Every woman had to go and take a turn as a temple prostitute once a year.
Well, that has its advantages, I would suppose. in that if the husband wasn't paying too much attention to her, she'd be guaranteed of at least once a year.
Well, there's that, but it also took away the, or it's been speculated that it took away the stigma of illegitimacy. Because if she went and took a turn as a temple prostitute once a year and she happened to get pregnant, well, that's just how it goes. And daddy didn't get to run around, and it was taboo to suggest that he had been cuckolded because she was pregnant in the service of a goddess. Which meant the child would, by definition, be blessed.
Right.
And under the protection of the goddess. How about that? We just went further back in time than ancient Rome. Damn.
And it ain't from prayer meeting Wednesday, Robin.
Yeah, I know. We were a little short on prayer meeting material last night. By the way, I just got a note from Ron in Raleigh. Two-state solution, my ass. When Israel finishes annexing the West Bank and the luxury high-rises go up in Gaza, the U.S. will still be talking about a two-state solution, and Israel will still be saying they have no intention of stealing Palestinian land. You're not wrong, Ron. This is infuriating.
Well, you know, the United States is probably doing this out of a copious amount of embarrassment by looking at our own history. No, we're not trying to take native lands. No, as long as the water's run and the sky is blue, it's yours, until we find gold on that land, and then you got to move the fuck along.
Exactly. By the way, Ron in Raleigh says, P.S., did you like the Harris Teeter? I loved the Harris Teeter. I'd been in one in D.C., and it was seedy and downtrodden. This was a nice, nice store. And it reminded me very much of Ingalls in North Georgia and Food City in Tennessee. A lot of the same setup. Far cry from my little Kroger's here.
Kroger's tries.
Yeah, well, they do, and they're union, and that's nice. Flavio with a question. What does this mean? Explaining the UK abstention, the British envoy to the UN, Barbara Woodward, said, "We believe that." Oh, I'm sorry.
"We believe that such recognition of Palestinian statehood should not come at the start of a new process, but it doesn't have to be at the very end of the process." What does that mean, Flavio? That's word salad.
It means we're dodging, Flavio.
Yeah. It means the United States told us to abstain, and we did what we were told. Because we're providing cover for America.
This is a shameful act.
Unpaid product placement, but TV viewing tip. Hi, Scott, wherever you are or aren't. Annette and I have just started watching on Apple TV Plus Michael Douglas in Franklin. And it's it centers on Franklin's time in France before and at the time of the Revolution, when he is being double-speaked and hoodooed and Vergen, who is the foreign minister, I believe, is playing both ends against the middle, and it's absolutely fascinating, and it's damn good TV.
And you will begin to see Franklin playing the noble savage, playing up to French expectations.
That's what that big fox fur or beaver fur or whatever fur that he wore.
Right. And he became, for the French, the backward American savage philosopher, and he was the toast of the salons.
Oh, and last night, and of course, I live in Fayette County. Fayette County, which is Fayette. And last night, we met the young Marquis de Lafayette. And, the French dandies of the day. Those boys are wearing more makeup than I've ever worn. Probably to cover up things like smallpox scars and syphilis scars and the like.
You do know that the Marquis de Lafayette was a member of the King's Musketeers.
Yes.
That was a social club for upwardly mobile noblemen who needed to go into the military.
The thing is, he shows up on the screen, and I looked at it and I said, "Oh my God, he's such a twink." Because he is. And of course, the stories have been perpetuated over the centuries that he and some of the other young nobles who came to the revolutionary side weren't big on girls.
No.
Which is really freaking cool.
It was all about the manliness of brotherhood in arms, yeah. Absolutely. Washington was known to treat these young men almost like sons.
Those boys all fluttered around Washington, who, by the way, never had children and also didn't seem to be terribly interested in women except for marrying a wealthy one.
Well, he might have just, if he felt that itch, all he had to do is go down the quarters.
And, of course, he married the previously married Martha Custis, who had children. Those Custises got around because I'm pretty sure that the traitor Bobby Lee married a Custis as well. That was her house at Arlington.
Yeah, that was his mother's home. And the United States, it was later figured out after the war, that the United States had illegally seized the Arlington home. But by then, the grounds were already being used as a cemetery for the war dead. And an interesting thing about the Marquis de Lafayette, after the American Revolution, he went back to France, became a bankrupt, to keep his house to piss off his creditors. He had the locks changed in his house. Every lock in the house, inside and out, was changed. But the most ironic thing is there was an American flag that flew, even during World War II, in Paris, and it was above the grave of the Marquis de Lafayette, and the Nazis did not take it down. They let that flag fly throughout the entire war. The Marquis de Lafayette is one of the more fascinating characters that come out of the Revolutionary period.
Oh, he is. And I mean, there's a reason that there are so many Fayettes, Fayettevilles, Fayette counties.
Lafayette, Indiana.
Or as it's pronounced in Louisiana, Stan, Lafayette, L-A-U-G-H-Y-E-T, Lafayette. Or here in the hills, Fayetteville.
But, as it's known in Bloomington, Indiana, that other town.
Let's see. How many Fayette counties are there?
Probably over a dozen.
Fayette County, Alabama, Fayette County, Georgia, Fayette County, Illinois, Fayette County, Taliban, Indiana, Fayette County, Iowa Stan, Fayette County, Kentucky Stan, Fayette County, Ohio, Fayette County, Pennsylvania, Fayette County, Tennessee, Fayette County, Texas Stan, and Fayette County, Virginia. That's where it gets interesting. Fayette County, Virginia has existed twice. One of them is now Fayette County, Kentucky, and one of them is my own beloved Fayette County, West Virginia, but we were both Fayette County, Virginia once.
So is there a Fayette County in the current borders of Virginia?
No.
Oh, so when West Virginia seceded from Virginia, they took Fayette County with them. Okay. But, you know, Taliban, Indiana used to be part of Virginia.
Everything all the way to California used to be part of Virginia. In fact, Augusta County, Virginia, was deemed to run at least to the Mississippi River. Which is kind of wild.
That was the justification that was used for the illegal settlements. On another period of American brutality, the state of Indiana was formed out of such illegal settlements. There were laws in the United States saying that settlers couldn't go past the Allegheny Mountains.
Yeah, that was the King's Peace. Well, that was a promise he made to the tribes.
And, you know, Americans being American, we ignore that shit.
Oh, yeah.
My
ancestors were part of ignoring that shit. But Dave, I got to roll here because it'll soon be time to bring this to a close.
All right, girl. I'll talk to you next week.
I hope you have a wonderful evening, and you just stay well and hale and hearty and whole.
I will.
All right. Take care, Dave. Our best to Christine.
All right. And I'll tell the folks down at the shop. You said, hey.
Oh, do please. I think of Gladys all the time. It can't be easy managing a sheltered workshop for Eric the Dumber.
Well, I asked her about that. She'd given him the day off when his daddy's trial started because she felt he needed to be there to show his support. It's a familial thing, and I told her, Gladys, the floors look like shit. She goes, don't worry, they'll be better when he gets back. So, I don't know.
Well, I know she rides herd pretty close. Dave, take care. Have a great night. Bye.
All right, good night.
And so we'll wrap this up. We've still got 2:25 to go on Gino's April is Blooming Challenge. Thanks for meeting Ralph's challenge this evening and taking us down a little bit more on Geno's. I'm sorry about being late to the microphone. Some days are just more than other days. But back here for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow evening. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to a... I want to see here because I want to. While I was in Beckley today, I checked the mailbox. Thank you so much to Sam in Oregon. I received your envelope. Thank you so much. Thank you to Brandon and Fennell in Brooklyn. Again, thank you to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you to our challenge makers, our challenge respondents, our a la carte contributors. Thank you this evening. Christopher, thank you so much. Thank you, Steve, in New York. Thank you, Ralphs, for the challenge. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, please, like and subscribe to the podcast. Brother Deacon Asa was looking into things for me because a couple of you have told me that the Apple podcast isn't picking up the feed as it should. It appears to be something slow on their end. Maybe it had something to do with my absences. I don't know. It shouldn't. There are people who put up a podcast once a week as opposed to five times a week here. But it does appear it's not on this end. It's a glitch beyond my pay grade. But anyway, like each episode, please. As I keep saying, please subscribe on a couple of different platforms, because if Apple Podcast doesn't pick it up, somebody else does. Apparently all the rest of them do. Leave a remark or a comment or a review here and there. It really helps. It grows the visibility of the program among the algorithms. There's a lot of podcasts out there, but only a few of them that have done 3 hours a night, five nights a week for 20 plus years. That's this program. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Please remember, if there's anything you want to download from White Rose Society, please do it sooner rather than later, because on June the 1st, after over a quarter of a century, a lot of which was spent saving the very idea of progressive talk, the White Rose will go dark and be no more. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 25 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. See when you can get your next booster. Get it when you can. Wear your mask if you're around the maggots, because you're probably more likely to pick COVID up from them than from anybody else. For some reason or another, last night, when I was in North Carolina, I thought to myself, what should I be listening down here? And the first thought that came to mind was to listen to Doc and Merle Watson. I love that North Carolina accent. And along the way last night, I started, looking up the musical interludes, especially early on from the old Andy Griffith Show. And I found Andy singing a dirge to Rafe Hollister, who had refused to let the county nurse give him his vaccination. It was hilarious, and I may yet put it up on social media as a dedication to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and his anti-vaxxer pals. Yeah, maybe just, if you want to see it on YouTube, look up Rafe Hollister, Andy Griffith Show. You'll find it. So wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance as best you can. And if Nitwit Nero comes toward you saying,
look at all of these same news stories that were all printed up for me to make it look like a bunch of different stuff,
I'll avoid him like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Wayne and Gina, it's all for you. Later.